are live. Welcome, folks. It is Monday, September the 15th, and this is episode 3731 of the Survival Podcast. And this is one of those shows that's going to go into the darkness. It is, because darkness showed up last week. Darkness showed up last week. Now, of course, you guys all know instantly I'm talking about Charlie Kirk. And that will be the focus of today's episode to a degree, but more the aftermath of what comes next. And dare I say, some things I'm going to tell you today that might be an alternative that many of you are not going to like as an alternative. Let me tell you something. By the time I'm done today, if you pay attention and if you don't come in with preconceived ideas, you'll see that what I'm suggesting is a hell of a lot better than the other alternative, which is really, really, really bad. And I'll get into all of that today. But when I say that last week was a week where the darkness showed up, I am not only talking about Charlie Kirk. Of course, there was also, now it happened 2 weeks earlier, but that young Ukrainian refugee that was stabbed mercilessly in the neck while sitting on a train looking at her phone, minding her own business. And not only did the sick bastard do it, and not only did the media cover it up, and then not only did the media pretend it never happened, but the other like six odd people who were on that train that after that guy left just all stood there. Duh. And there's some of you making excuses for them. Oh, they were afraid they wouldn't get in trouble with the law. Shut the fuck up, honestly. I don't want any more excuses. If you showed up today to hear me make an excuse for anybody, you showed up to the wrong place. I'm done. I'm done. As pissed as I was Thursday, oh, it's nothing compared to having a few days to reflect on it and watch the side of peace and unity and rights for all run their effing mouths. So if you showed up today for off the top rope Jack, you showed up to the right place. If you showed up for kind, benevolent, let's all get together and see what we can do to make the world a better place, Jack, you showed up to the wrong effing podcast. Maybe one of those will happen this week. Maybe it won't. I don't know, but I'm going to tell you right now, it's not going to be today. This is not a time to beat the sword into a plowshare. This is the time to beat the plowshare into a sword. And even that side of the world makes allowances for both directions. And today we're going to talk about doing that in hopefully a way that won't result in some of the awful things that I forecasted happening last week, which is the alternative. There's no going back now. There's no way that we go backwards. And there's no way that you can put that genie back in the bottle. It's over. It's out. The question now is, where do we go from here? So we're going to talk about something today in all of this, along with the aftermath and what's going on and what people are saying and what really happened and shutting your conspiracy holes. For the love of God, shut your – people that know nothing about ballistics are like – I saw Ian Carroll, right? And sometimes I like what the guy does, but he has gotten so addicted to his own celebrity that he has to drum everything up. Like, this is what it looks like when you shoot a ballistic gel mannequin in the head with 30-06. Yeah, but it's not what it looks like when you shoot him in the throat in soft tissue, you moron. You moron. And it also doesn't look like your video either, because it doesn't work that way. And anybody who's ever shot a deer in the head with a 30-06 knows how stupid you are. But no, we have to have conspiracy theories. So we'll spend a little bit of time talking about what happened, a little bit of time talking about the aftermath and the left being unable to do the one winning move they have, which is shut up, but they can't do it. And we'll talk about why. We'll quash some of your conspiracy theory bullshit, but I'm not going to spend much time on it. If you start spouting your conspiracy bullshit in my live feed in the chat, mostly I will ignore you. If you start like being repetitive with it, like the cut and paste assholes, I will ban you. I don't have time for you disrupting everybody else's discussion. You can say what you have to say, but you can't dominate the conversation. And we're going to move on, and we're going to talk about where do we go from here, because it's the only discussion we really need to be having right now. All right, so before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. I don't know if they're still sponsors after today's episode. We'll see. I'm pretty sure Jeff the Berkey Guy Gleason at USABerkeyFilters.com won't be going anywhere because of Off the Top Rope Jack today. But if you really want to make sure that you're drinking the cleanest, best-tasting water you can, get a Berkey system. Do not get it from some random clown at a gun show. Go to Jeff the Berkey Guy Gleason. This man has been selling Berkey systems for longer than the Survival Podcast has existed. That's about 17 years now, right? So I don't know when he started, but it was before me. He was one of the first sponsors I ever had. He's been with us since the very beginning. He's a great dude, excellent service, and you need this in your life if you don't have another system for filtering your water. Learn more at usaberkeyfilters.com. Next up today, you guys know I'm a Bitcoin bull. I think that that's where the majority of your surplus capital should be swept into, but I've never been an absolutist in anything, really. I've tried to be nuanced in all things, especially investing, and I always have recommended, and I still recommend, around 5% of your net wealth in precious metals. That would be silver and or gold. I actually say 5 to 10% is fine, but my personal recommendation is about 5% of your net wealth. And that's all in. That's the liquid part of your home, too. Like, what is your total net worth on a balance sheet in reality, not delusional net worth? And then about 5% of that. Why should you get it from JM Bullion? Oh, well, they've been a sponsor of the show for 12 years. That would be a start. All their orders ship free. They have better pricing than Monex, Apmex, and Lear Capital. I can talk directly to the president. And if you're an MSB member, they give you a discount. I don't know. Why would you deal with anybody other than JM Bullion? And with that, let's go ahead and get on into talking about today's subject. But I do want to hit just two things real quick first. Great. It's a bit choppy. Hopefully it's only for Bumatu. Ugh. You know, when this shit happens, I don't know what to do about it. Because if I cancel the feed and I come back in, I lose half my audience. And we're rocking right toward 150 people right now. Tom says it seems okay. I'm just going to roll and hope that it works out. Maybe it's the deep state. If it is, it'll get worse. Trust me, it's going to get worse from here. But real quick, before we get into this topic, I want to just say a couple things. Number one, the AI course started today. If you signed up for it, please make sure you're actually doing it. You have got to be in the Telegram group. I think Tom has done everything he can to get in touch with anybody who didn't join the group. If you're not in the group, you can't get the material. So if you're having any kind of trouble, reach out to me or Tom and we'll help you. On the workshop, we did not sell out Saturday. We did sell out our normal amount of seats, not in like 2 or 3 minutes, but in like 15. But we do still have some tickets. I have made a decision. As of this Friday, if we have not sold all the tickets, I'm shutting it down anyway. We have plenty of people. We're good to go. And there's a point where you have to start building the workshop, like all the reserve food and everything else, to the attendance. And it's just much easier to say, Friday, we're done. So you have till Friday close of business, and I'm shutting it down. So if you still want to come, you've always wanted to come to one, go to thesurvivalpodcast.com, scroll down to the post about it, and you can sign up now. All right. Now, Jesse says the feed is smoothing out. Good. I hope so. All right. So let's start off with, let's talk about, first of all, the events in the aftermath up to now without beating it up, because it's been on your TV set 24/7 since Thursday, right? And they just keep repeating the same shit. But the basics is, from my standpoint, isn't so much what happened. I think we, like, normal people know what happened. A young man raised in a regular, normal-ass home, which now means he must be a Republican. So normal equals Republican, according to the left. That's their own words. But became radicalized, which is very common. And by the way, it is generally the case that children tend to differ from their parents politically, especially in like 18 to 25 years. We naturally rebel against our parents. My parents were Democrats. Who'd have thunk it, right? You know, but you know why I'm called Jack? Because my dad was called Jack, even though my name's John. Do you know my dad was called Jack? Because his parents, my grandparents, thought JFK was God. Like, I mean, not quite, but almost. Like, only their Catholicism kept them from going all the way to that level, right? So I come from a long line of Democrats, and I'm many things. I wouldn't call myself a Republican, but I'm damn sure not a liberal, and I'm damn sure not a Democrat. So that is a normal thing. The dude was living with a transing person. He wasn't fully trans. He was in the process of transing. And it looks like they had a relationship with each other. And, of course, the left is trying to spin this, too. He was actually MAGA. He was a Trump supporter, right? Just shut up, right? And the right is angry. The right is angry. We all know this. but they are not angry in a way that the left can comprehend. The left thinks they have a monopoly on righteous anger. They really do. That's why they have all their videos where they're screaming and yelling. There's a literal Nazi in there. And I saw that this morning. Saw that this morning. Video on YouTube. Like, the guy that posted it said, I would have thought this was a skit or something if somebody would have shown it to me 10 years ago. And it was just a protester. I just run around just talking to people and just watching them completely melt down. The right doesn't melt down like that, but they do get that angry. The left does not understand the anger of the right right now. And it's a very dangerous situation for everybody, for everybody. Next, the left has one winning move right now. And I don't even know if it's a winning move, but they have one smart move right now. And only one. There is only, I mean from the leftist TikTok moron with blue hair and 17 nose rings to the anchor woman haircut lady on MSNBC. Okay? And everything in between that. There is only one smart play for them to do right now. Shut up. That's it. That is the only thing they could have done to not make it worse. And none of them have shut up. And, you know, there's a token two or three that are like, we need to understand that political violence is never acceptable. And they're the same people that were screaming Nazi, 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 Nazi for the last 10 years. So their words are hollow. But most of them either directly and maliciously are attacking the legacy of Charlie Kirk and his widow, which is a sick fucking thing to do, to attack a woman who just lost her husband so publicly in such a horrifically violent way. They're either doing that or they're like, well, it's a shame, but, you know, what can you expect, right? So what they've done is, oh, there's a giant hornet's nest. Let's not get a 12-foot pole and poke it, which would already be stupid. Let's get our little number two pencil out and start poking the hornet's nest. And I'll tell you why. Because the people that think they're protected in their little ivory towers up in the media, they believe that no matter what happens, they'll be fine. They'll be safe. Nothing will happen to them. They're all up in their little bougie protected place, and they don't care if the blue hair lady gets smoked. And they want the right to be violent, and they want the right to be violent publicly on display so they can play victim, clutch their pearls, and pass more laws. The right does not play the game that way. I mean, maybe one or two people on the right, but that is not how the right plays the game. Again, before we go forward on this, though, I don't want to hear your conspiracy theories. I'm not interested. I'm not interested. I'm not interested at all in your conspiracy theories. Do I think that maybe some other people were involved? Yeah, I think like a giant Discord server full of people. Am I going to be shocked if it turns out that the FBI eventually says the line, he was known to us? No. But in the end, what happened was this kid grew up learning how to shoot. 140-yard shot is not hard. He took a rifle onto a roof and shot somebody. But I saw the rifle was this, and I don't care. Go to GunBroker, put in Mauser 3006. You'll find hundreds of examples for sale right now. But they said he took it apart, and then they found it together. You don't know that. No. If they took a picture of it, if that rifle is even the rifle, instead of maybe the news just made an example, like this is what a sporterized Mauser looks like. Even if it was found disassembled, if they would make a picture of it for you to see, they would probably just set it together. Oh, you got it. It's really hard. No, it's not. It takes one fucking screwdriver and about fucking 20 seconds to take the average rifle apart. Not like you see on TV, not all things snapping together, making noises, and the scope bolting on and all, like too much TV, Danielson. Not like that. Like just stock and rifle so that it will take less to conceal. That takes usually one screw and you lift it out. That's it. And it would take this much time to put it together and take a picture of it as it would look assembled without even putting the screw back in. So just take all of your freaking conspiracy bullshit, shove it right up your ass like a suppository, and blow it out your ass later on. I'm not interested. If something comes out that's worth tracking down, you know what we do here, we'll do it. But this, you know, the Jews did it with their NASA space laser penguins or something. Just shut up. I don't have any time for it. So I'm done with that. I'm going to ignore that until somebody gives me something credible other than like some random clown's opinion online. I'm not interested. All right. The media and academia did this as much as Tyler did this. That's something you have to understand. And where I'm going with today's show, I'm just giving you that as a primer now because I'm going to prove it to you later. And it's going to show you something that the right has been very stupid about and has not understood for 70 years. The right has not been in power in this country in any way since the 1970s. And they have been losing power since the 1930s on a consistent basis because they don't know where power is. Power is not in your elected officials. Power is not in Congress. Power is not in the presidency. It's not even the Supreme Court. Those are apparatuses of power. They pale in comparison to what the public thinks and does. There's all kinds of laws that say you can't do things that people do every day and no one gives a fuck. We passed a constitutional amendment to make alcohol illegal and people drank more than before the amendment was passed. And it was very difficult to get convictions and in many cases arrests because the cop that was supposed to arrest you was at the speakeasy with you. That alone tells you if you can't enforce will of law through a constitutional amendment, which is difficult to pass and the highest law in our land, then an EO or some bullshit like that or one Supreme doesn't really control society. It might make certain things legal or illegal. It might shift the marketplace from gray to black or black to white or whatever, but it doesn't change behavior. The influence on behavior and thought is where power lies. Think about that for later as we get into this. And then lastly, before I move on from this section, I've seen a bunch of people, what's the right think they're going to do? Go out and shoot a bunch of people? No, they don't. You don't understand this. And I've heard this from some people that are long-term listeners to this show. You do not get who the people are who are good at and prone to violence on the right. You don't, unless you're one of them, right? Or at least one of them light, like you understand it, but you wouldn't do it, but you could do it if you wanted to do it. If you're one of those people, then you know full well what's going to happen. And I'll just put it this way. I'm not going to hurt anybody, but let's just say there was somebody in my life that I believed had to go away permanently forever, right? Like they were in some way were a direct threat. So let's say the safety and survival of my grandchildren. Yeah, you're going to take a dirt nap. Do you think I'm going to, like, go on Discord and say I'm going to do it, talk to a bunch of my friends, make a movement to get rid of this person, be known as a person that wants this person gone, and then go do it in public? Do you think that's – if you think that's what I would do, you don't know shit, right? No. If I did it, it'd be like an Unsolved Mysteries episode in 5 years. I mean, seriously. And the other thing you need to understand is a lot of these people are military on the right who think this way. Do you know what soldiers do after an operation? It's called an AAR. That is an after action review. Do you know why you do an AAR? So you can high five each other. Hey, we zapped that guy. No, you go through everything you did. Everything went wrong. And even if the operation came off flawlessly, where it could have went wrong. And what does that mean about the second operation? It's better. And sometimes certain people, when they get to do things like this, they get a taste for it, and it doesn't go away. So some of the things I'm going to talk about today, you're going to find is dirty, underhanded shit, because what the left's been doing for 70, 100 years. But let me tell you something. It beats that alternative. And if something doesn't begin to shift soon, that is the alternative you're going to get, because I guarantee you there's people out there running the numbers, doing the math, making the plans right now. That's already happening. That's in motion. The only hope is that in the time delay between the choice and the decision to act, that the logic part of their brain kicks in and they don't act. Because I think what will happen if something else isn't done, if there's no alternative presented, you're not going to see like people's head blow up on TV. It's just going to be like, oh, gee, that blue-haired influencer, whatever, disappeared. Oh, that leader of that organization, no one knows what happened. That's what's going to happen. And the guy that did it's going to probably have like five military buddies that say, yeah, man, we were at my house playing poker, and he was drunk and passed out on the couch the whole time. Here's a picture of him. I'm telling you that. that is how the people on the side that you call the right, which I think we need to get rid of left and right altogether in this because it doesn't make sense anymore. And we can't even call it liberal and conservative, right? Because the left is nothing like what liberal actually means. The liberal is the person that's like, I disagree with what you say, but I'll defend your right to say it to my very death. That is classic liberalism. What we have is lunatics and rational people now. And that is by design. And I'm going to tell you how that became the case as we go on. Here's the reality in your face if you'll just look at it. First of all, there's a lot of shit about the trans component to this. And how trans was the trans guy living with this kid? Were they actually butt buddies or whatever? I don't know. I'm not going to claim to know. It sure looks that way. But this particular individual incident could have everything to do with trans stuff. It could have nothing to do with trans stuff. There's something in the middle. But in the last few years, we've had an awful lot of non-binary trans testicle whatevers shoot and kill a bunch of people. School shootings, etc. This has happened. If you deny it, I'm going to delete your comment. I'm just going to get rid of you. You are not worth talking to. We cannot deny that this has happened because you could just list the big events that have happened in the last 2 years. And it's like, you know, 3 out of 4, trans, non-binary, trans, non-binary, right? I'm sorry. It's true. But you know what? We've always had that. Trans people aren't new. I mean, they were mocked and shit back in the 80s, but we had them. Do you know how many serious acts of violence I can think of from the 80s by trans people? None. 90s? None. Early 2000s? None. This shit didn't start until two things happened. One, the heavy use of medications, and not just hormone-altering medications, the SSRIs and all that other bullshit going into it, and the psyop of telling these people, you want to live as a woman? Okay, that's okay, dude. You can. You actually are a woman. You can't take somebody with a mental disorder and reinforce the mental disorder to the positive and not get a negative output. That's how that's going to work. And Aaron says it's the hormones and the SSRIs. And I believe that makes it worse. So you all have an ongoing mental disorder. You've reinforced the mental disorder to the positive. You've jacked up the hormones, generally speaking, in people that are at the point where they're fully developing into a man or a woman, say 16 to 22. Yeah. And then you throw some psychotropic medication on top of it. Gee, what could go wrong? Well, this is what could go wrong. But we didn't have this problem. And the other problem we have right now is even the people apologizing for being wrong in what they said, and I didn't really mean it, and I took the post down and all. None of them are actually questioning why they were wrong, if they even believe they were wrong. I don't want to give this person the benefit of the doubt because he hasn't written anything worth reading since 1985. But Stephen King is a good example, so I'll use it. Most people are at least familiar with his name. Stephen King wrote a horrible post on X about Charlie Kirk saying he was for stoning gay people to death. Well, that didn't go over so well for Mr. King. So he took it down and then he apologized and said, I was wrong. He never said that, and I was wrong. I'm not going to say that he's telling the truth. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt for the sake of the discussion, whether it's true or not. Okay. This is what I'll tell you I do know. Do you know what he didn't do? Ask himself important questions like, why did I believe that? Where did I get that information from? And does that mean I can continue to trust that source? In other words, King and all of these people who are being proven wrong right now will have Gelman amnesia. They will never do the hard work of questioning, why was I wrong? Where did I get my information from? And this is also very, very dangerous. Art by me, Lee Murphy, says performative apologies at best. Yes, I would say most likely, but I do think there are people that have made statements like that. And then, you know, like their intern or something comes to them and goes, bro, you shouldn't have said that because that's not true. Oh, yes, it is. And then they tried to find it. And they're like, oh, shit, get rid of it. It's too late, man. Internet's forever, bro. Internet's forever. It doesn't ever forget. It never forgets. But what I'm saying is, even if it's not King, if it's somebody who made these statements, and then was like the other one, like here's one that's going around a lot right now that's easily disproven. I don't have any empathy for Charlie Kirk because he said he didn't believe in empathy. It was a New Age word made up. He doesn't believe in empathy. If you look at the whole quote, what he actually said is he doesn't like the term empathy because he does believe it's a made up New Age word because it implies the ability to actually feel what the other person is feeling. And no one can feel what the other person is feeling. So he preferred the term sympathy. Even if you disagree with that, if you think empathy is real and you're an empath or whatever, it changes the entire dynamic of the statement, doesn't it? But no, they keep doing this. And again, people are then presented with facts that show that they're wrong, and they either double down and say, I'm just right, it's all a lie, or they go, oh, I don't know. But everybody has Gelman amnesia. No one's – so this is a powder keg. They can't shut up, and they can't examine their own stupidity. Now, is it a good time for rules for radicals for the right? And I can hear the wailing and gnashing of teeth. Some of you probably had it right from the beginning, seeing the title of today's show. Rules for radicals, that's the playbook for Marxists. Well, let's just take that on its face, because you're wrong, but let's go ahead and say that it is. If you were a football player, like in the NFL, you played for, I don't know, the Denver Eagles, right? Let's just make shit up so nobody gets attached to it, right? You play for the Denver Eagles, and next week's game, you were playing against the Chicago 49ers, right? And somehow, you got a copy of the Chicago 49ers playbook. All the plays, their initial sequence, the calls, the delays, the alts, all of it. Would you just go, that's the enemy's playbook, throw it away? Or would you be like, you know what, we should fucking read this. We should fucking read this because this is what they're going to do to us on Sunday. So we should know what they're going to do so we can plan our defense and our offense against them according to their own rule book. So even if it was the Marxist playbook, you should read it. You should read it because it's what your enemy's doing. But it's not a Marxist playbook. And I need you guys to get comfortable with a reality because it's true whether you get comfortable with it or not. Again, I'm back to TDAO. T-D-A-O. TDAO. That's my movement out of this. And that is those days are over. Those days are over. Whenever anybody says something now like, oh, but if we do blank, the other side will do it too. That's a historical footnote. That's a historical footnote. That was a good story, bro, and it was never true. The left has never waited for the right to do something that enables them to win before they do it. They always do it first. They always act first. The right's gerrymandering because the left did it for 70 fucking years. That's why. Right? But if we do it, they'll do it. They already did it, you dumbasses. Right? If we appoint a Supreme Court justice in an election year, they've already done it. I don't care what you come up with, but if we do that, it opens the door for them to. The left will do whatever is expedient every time, and the right won't, and that's why you get your asses beat, guys. That's why you get your asses beat, because you're up against an enemy. You don't know their rules, you don't know their plays, you won't take any time to learn them, and you damn sure won't use them back on them. And they're like, I don't understand why we get our asses kicked all the time. Well, that's why. And the other thing is that Rules for the Radicals was never a book for the left, if you'd actually read it, and most of you haven't, and you should. And the first time I read it, and honestly, I'm going to read it again, because the last time I read it fully was before I did the podcast. It would have been early 2000s that I read this book. But if you actually read it, you would realize that Saul Alinsky, who wrote the book, takes a pretty negative view of Marxists in the book. Not even so much for their ideology, but because he thinks they oversimplify things and they're basically idiots. No, see, Rules for Radicals was about one thing and one thing only. people who don't have power taking power from the people who have power. That's it. It was written in kind of like a timeless mindset. Now, there's some real limitations to it that I'll get to today that make the direct application by the right impossible and make the overall effectiveness of the entire strategy somewhat limited. But in the end, before you criticize something, you should know its purpose. And you can't get through the first chapter and not understand what I just told you. It's about at any time the have-nots taking from the haves. That's it. And the problem that the right has is that the right is dumb. I'm sorry. The left is stupid, but the right is dumb. And the right is dumb because they see the world as it should be versus as it is. And that makes you dumb because it makes you do dumb things. And I'm defining dumb is, if you're stupid, you can't help doing something stupid, right? If you're dumb, you have sufficient intelligence to comprehend what's going on, and you do something dumb anyway. It's in spite of your intelligence, where stupid is, in the words of Forrest Gump, as stupid does. So the reason the right is stupid as to this is the average person that's on the political right or the conservative side, or at this point, the normal side. If you said, describe the balance of power between liberals and conservatives, left and right, lunatics and sane people, for the past 50 years, they would say, well, it's moved back and forth. You know, we had the Reagan years, and that was kind of split power because Tip O'Neill and the Democrats had the Congress, but Reagan had like an iron grip on the presidency. And then we had the Bush years, and that was kind of split. And then Clinton came in, and it became one-sided. Then it became split again. Then Bush came in, it became one-sided to the right, and then it split again. And then Obama came in, and it became one-sided, and then split again. And then, you know, then we had Trump, and it was kind of one-sided, and then it split again. And then we had Biden, and it was kind of one-sided, and then split again. And now Trump, and Trump's completely got control. He's got the court, he's got the Congress, and he's got the White House. Yeah? Okay, that's all bullshit. When it comes to haves, what we're talking about here, and Alinsky's mainly talking about stuff, physical things, right? How much money you have, where you live, etc. But today, there's very little have-not in this country. I know you think there is, but the person on welfare living in the projects in the inner city in the United States, if they choose to anyway, lives better than most people in third world countries. And when he's talking have-nots, he's talking about third world country level have-nots. That's what he's really talking about. He's talking about the poorest of the poor in urban America before welfare was a thing. That's what he's talking about in the book, if you actually read it. So the power is the have versus have-not today. And there has not been a back and forth of power in this country because you think the government has the power. But as I've told you, the actions and thoughts of people and control of them is the true power. And what drives the actions and thoughts and deeds of Americans today? What are the two institutions that most control how people think and act in society? Is it government? Do you ever wake up today and say, I have formed an opinion because my congressman said so? I have formed an opinion because the head of the EPA said so. No. You get your opinions from your teachers, academia, and from your TV, the media. And today, of course, it's the internet and influencers and everything in between. Media and academia. The left has complete and total fucking control of the media and academia by every meaningful measure. That doesn't mean they have 100%. It means they have an overwhelming majority of control in the messaging through both entities. It started with academia, and that goes all the way back to the 20s, but it really ramped up post-World War II, late 1940s into the 50s. And that continued and never stopped. And the control by people with sanity and decency in academia has gone down every single fucking year. And then something happened, I'll get to in a second after I cover the media. The media actually stayed mostly under the control of the right, as we define it anyway, until the 70s when it began to fully erode. So by the 1970s, we were still doing things like the FBI and the CIA wanted to deport John Lennon. If you go back and look at TV shows, from sitcoms to dramas and everything in between, in the 1970s, America is always the good guys, right? The hippies are the bad guys, or at least to be mocked, right? Like, all of that was, and it started to shift. In the 80s, it shifted. In the 90s, it shifted. And then it just went parabolic recently. Well, here's why. So what you do first is you take over academia. You shape the minds of the next two generations. And as those generations come into positions of power, you promote and hold up and glorify the ones that took the medicine the way you wanted it, while you continue the next two, three generations being indoctrinated in institutions, and you create a relay of handing off lunacy. And this is how you get, I know this is going to sound totally divorced from this, but it's the truth. This is how you get a Star Wars series about lesbian Jedis, and 18-year-old boys don't want to watch it. Really? Let that sink in. Yeah, I want you're like 50 like me or so, I want you to go back in a time machine. I mean, you think back, you're 16 years old, it's the mid-80s. And they make a movie or a series, Star Wars with lesbian Jedis. You're interested. You could say you're not, because your wife's sitting next to you or whatever, bro, but you're interested. It failed. Because it was woke. Right? It sounds like a porn plot. But in the end, it was just woke bullshit, and it fell on its ass because men are less susceptible to this than women. Unfortunately, when men do become susceptible to it, they're far more prone to violence than women, especially calculated violence. That's just, and it's no surprise then that there's more men on the right and more women on the left, because it's emotion and logic. And the problem with logic is when logic is put to evil, it's very, very effective, far more so than emotion in actually committing final acts. Move with emotion, finish with logic. That is the mindset behind all of this. The other thing is, we can no longer deny the deep state. Anybody denying there's an existence of a deep state right now needs to shut up. But the thing is, you need to broaden your definition of the deep state. The deep state is not just the state. Academia and media are part of the deep state. They are enablers of the deep state. I ran a poll on X this week, last week, I guess, and I said, which is the bigger group of scumbags, the media or academia? It was close. It was like a 10% spread, and academia won. But all the people that voted for academia said something in the comments. That's exactly what I think. Academia is worse because you give your children over to them for, 13 or more years, and you don't get to see what they're doing. And your children spend more time with them than they do with you. And they're conditioned to believe that they can trust them. The media, I can sit there with my kid on the couch, and when somebody says something, I can go, that guy's wrong, and here's why. And I have credibility against a news anchor. I don't have credibility against this college professor. So the deep state is real. And this is what the deep state actually looks like. Because the deep state is everything that controls the population, not just bureaucrats and elected officials. Oh, and let's add that too. Who has more power in government, bureaucrats or elected officials? Who had more power to shape health policy, the president of the fucking United States during COVID or Anthony Fauci? Which one was elected? Which one wasn't? See how that works? Now, you guys tell me, do you think the majority of governmental bureaucrats, not elected officials, would be best described as left or right? And if you say anything other than it's overwhelmingly left, you've ignored the voting data out of D.C., which is primarily made up of government employees. It's something like 93% of D.C. voters vote Democrat every time. So the left has the media, academia, K-12 and university, and the bureaucracy. And you watch a little trading of horses done at the executive and legislative branch and you think there's a balance of power, it's all by design. It's all by freaking design. And I do like this. Cabo says commie. I think that is actually a better term for the left right now. Communists. They are communists. Whether they know it or not, they're communists. You can be tricked into being something and not know that's what you are. They're communists. They're Marxists. We have to stop living in denial of this reality, that the left is in charge, has been in charge, and has become more powerful for the last 70 years. No one wants to hear that. That's one of many uncomfortable truths I'm going to give you today. But it's the truth. You cannot fix a problem until you admit you have it. You can't stop being an alcoholic till you say, I'm an alcoholic. You can't stop being a drug addict till you say, I'm a drug addict. You can't regain power you've lost until you admit you've lost power. The right does not have power. The conservatives do not have power. The sane people do not have power. They don't. They just don't. Charlie was killed in the end for two reasons. It's very important this be understood as well. People think Charlie was killed for what he said. He wasn't. Plenty of people have said everything he said and more. And no one tried to kill him. No one even yells at him. No one shows up and protests him. No. Charlie was killed because, first of all, he understood what I just told you, where the real power was. Of the media and academia, the bigger power structure, the power structure shift that enabled the takeover of the media was academia. Charlie went straight into the belly of the beast. With no college degree, he went to college. He's probably spent more time on a college campus than most people that have a degree spend on a college campus. He went right into the heart of their power structure, and that was a huge threat. But the other side, it wasn't what he said. It was that people listened to it. Once he started to be heard and the momentum began to grow, he became public enemy number one. I would tell you that the left probably hated Charlie Kirk more than Trump. Now, did they focus more on Trump? Yes. But the loathing hatred was more for people like Charlie than for Donald Trump. You'll understand the Trump dynamic and how he became the face of evil as we get into the rules for radicals. Okay? But that's what it was. He went where the problem really was, and he started to change it. And the impact is huge. And honestly, the left made a dire error in doing this. And you say, but it was one person. The left didn't get together in like the leftist convention of America and say, we're going to shoot Charlie Kirk. In a way, they did. You can't do what was done. Nazi. When you know you're talking to people that are mentally ill for that long, yeah, you can't do that and not know that eventually this is what's going to happen, or at least somebody's going to try to do it. And, you know, some things are coming out now about how many times somebody tried to hurt this guy. You don't really hear about all the times people try and fail, especially when they're really incompetent people doing it. But when people are doing things like throwing bricks at somebody and stuff like that, and far worse, they're not doing it because they think it's a teddy bear hug. They're trying to do serious injury to these people. So I want to talk now about, I'm going to cover four rules for radicals from Saul Alinsky's book. And again, before I do this, I need to again tell you, if you believe that this book is like a handbook for Marxists, it isn't. It would be more accurate to say that Marxists have turned it into a handbook for their own agenda. But it wasn't written for Marxists. Again, if you read the book, you would know that. He's very clear about it in the beginning. It's about power, and he also uses the word friction a lot in the book. And what he says is there's never been change in society without friction. And the book sees things as they are versus the way they should be. The book is kind of a version of Machiavelli's The Prince, written in modern times, in the opposite direction. Machiavelli's The Prince was basically how the people in power could maintain power. And Alinsky's book is how the people that don't have power can get power. It is a structured system for obtaining power And any system can be adapted to the side that chooses to use it. In fact, the left has done so. The left does not use this in its pure form. And in fact, if all you know is the rules, which are the most quoted thing, what we're going to cover today, and the means, which is the next most quoted thing out of the book, you don't even understand the book. We're just going to surface level this today. We might go deeper into this concept in the future, not directly related to Charlie. In fact, I personally think we might need a book called Radical Rules for the Right, if such a thing doesn't already exist, with these modified to make some allowances for things the right just isn't good at. That's actually one of the rules, by the way. But rule number one, power is not only what you have, but what the enemy thinks you have. Power is not only what you have, but what the enemy believes you have. You see, one of the things the right has going for right now is the left is actually terrified of the right. You think when they say things like they're Nazis and they're going to take over and all, that they know they're lying. Now, your top echelon retards, like Chuck Schumer and Jocelyn Crockett and all, they know they're making that shit up. The 21-year-old woman that thinks she's a man with 17 nose rings, she doesn't. Maybe it's good that they're afraid. Maybe they don't need to be told not to be afraid. Because that hasn't worked. I mean, part of this is, for everything you're going to be upset about that I say today, that the right needs to be thinking about, how's your method working out? And it's working out like dog shit. Look at this country 20 years ago, look where it is today, and you have to admit your side has failed in every measurable way. You got the orange man reelected. Yay! Let's go bomb people all over the world. Let's start a fucking fight with Canada. Let's start a fucking fight with everybody. Let's go blow up Venezuelan boats. That'll fix our fucking problems. I'm not even saying all those things are necessary. Like, some are clearly bad, some maybe not as much. But none of that shit's going to fix our problems. None of that's what you voted for. He's deporting people. Yeah, probably not enough to actually move the needle. That's fine. It is what it is. But none of the shit that you really wanted to change has changed. Maybe a few DEI hires got fired or something. But your method's not working. So maybe it's better that the left actually be afraid of the right for a change. Because they're not. They haven't been. They talk about reasons to be afraid, but if they were really afraid, they wouldn't be saying the horrible shit they're saying now. They wouldn't have said the horrible shit they said about the poor blonde girl that got stabbed in the neck. It's like they think they were dangerous, but they don't really believe it. Maybe even if we're not, they need to believe it. Because when you're afraid of people, it alters your behavior. In the words of Ronald Reagan, no nation has ever been attacked because it was thought to be too strong. Maybe that's something we can leverage a little bit, right? Rule number four. This is the rule that the right, whether they know it or not right now, is textbook implementing. They're textbook implementing, and many of you are cheering it on. You don't even know it's from Rules for Radicals. Rule number four. Make the enemy live up to its own book of rules. The left has been masters of this. This is why the left will take the Bible and wear it like a skin to tell somebody on the right that's not what Jesus would do. When that person doesn't give a flipping rip what Jesus would do. They're not Christian. This is Rules for Radicals. See, in any conflict, both sides claim to be righteous, whatever their version of it is. And they create all these things that you're supposed to do. This way you're supposed to conduct yourself, right? But most of the time in conflicts, the side that wins is like, that's what we say. That's what we say. Yeah, everybody has due process. Take the motherfucker to a black site. Right? I'm sorry if you don't like it. That's how you get shit done. Right? We don't torture people. Hang them upside down by his toes. He'll talk. I mean, that's literally what's been done by power forever. Again, Alinsky sees the world as it is, not as it should be. All he did was look at every situation where power was taken and say, well, exactly how did that happen? And one of the ways is that you force the enemy into defending their own ethics and morals. or to live by their own rules, not necessarily ethics and morals. So how's that happening right now? Does anybody know where I'm going with this? How is this being done by a lot of people on the right in a very organized manner right now? And it just started Thursday. Making the left live by their own rules. What was one of the rules the left had for society, not for themselves? If you say something offensive, you deserve to be canceled. Yeah, there it is. Still, I believe that even though I said it, that both of these guys, because of the delay, they got it. Yeah, we're getting them fired. It's coming in now. Yeah, they're getting them fired, right? So the left is like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. I thought you guys were for free speech. Shut the fuck up, Karen. Okay? Just shut the fuck up, Karen. I don't hear your shit. I don't care if you get fired. Teed out. Those days are over. But you're supposed to be for free speech. And you can have all the free speech you want. You're not devoid of its consequences. But let's compare the two, shall we? Shall we compare the two? So what the left was doing is finding somebody they didn't like, for whatever reason didn't like them, combing through their social media and maybe finding like one post they made 12 years ago when they were 14 years old that was offensive, rallying the troops and then destroying this person's life. Or they've done shit that is so sick and twisted. There was an example. There was a tennis announcer one time that said of one of the, it was either Serena or the other Williams sister, she's going gorilla in the middle of a match. He said that. Well, that's racist. It's a term used in tennis forever. They destroyed this man. Nothing he said was, and they knew it wasn't, they did it for fucking shits and grins. They did it for shits and giggles. Okay? That's what they, and they did this for at least a decade. They've done this. Well, now, oh, wait a minute. You said if somebody says something offensive, they should be destroyed. Well, I think mocking a widow and saying she's full of hate 12 hours after her husband was murdered is offensive. Turns out, so does the school you work for. So does the hospital you work for. This is another thing, too. These people saying this shit are in positions teaching children in the judicial system, in the healthcare system. No. Fuck you all the way downstairs and around the corner. No. But that's rule number four of Rules for Radicals. So if you've been cheering that on, you've already adopted one of the 13 Rules for Radicals. Make the left look. Now, can we take that further? How many rules does the left have for us? Instead of focusing on defending ourselves, you have to go on the attack. Well, why aren't you doing this? But you selectively do. Like the whole thing about this strategy is, you laser focus on one thing until you get all you can out of it. And when you've gotten all you can on it, you move to another one. I'm going to acknowledge some weaknesses of the right. This is something the left is way better at than we are. The left is way better at outrage du jour, right? Outrage of the day or outrage de la semaine, outrage of the week. And just staying on that until they get everything they can out of it and going, okay, now tell us what to be mad about next. Right's not so good at that. We're more logical. But it works. Look at the last 70 years and you can see how well it works. Rule number five, classically used by the left for the last 70 years, but definitely the last 20. Ridicule is man's most potent weapon. There is no defense. It is almost impossible to counteract ridicule. Also, it infuriates the opposition who then react to your advantage. This is actually where the right could be better than the left using this strategy. Why? Because the left is more reactionary. Nothing takes a person in the middle and pushes them a little bit to the right side of the spectrum like some lunatic, unhinged retard shrieking and yelling nonsense. Well, who's it easier to get to do that? The well-adjusted young 25-year-old guy? Or the mentally ill 25-year-old person who believes they're opposite gender and is on 17 SSRIs and is pursuing their master's degree in gender studies. And Jake says Trump is the king of ridicule. It's part of why he's effective. He's also a Democrat, just so you know, right, if you've denied that. He's a middle-of-the-road
everyday middle America Democrat in 1995. He's just slightly more moderate than 1990s Bill Clinton, who wasn't as bad as you think he was. I'm sure he's nuts now. They all went nuts. But Bill Clinton was not a terrible, he wasn't a great president. He wasn't terrible compared to some. The economy was pretty good. Life was pretty effing normal. If you go listen to what he had to say in the mid-90s when he was president today, it sounds completely logical and normal. It would trigger the left. Yeah? But ridicule. Now, this is, though, the left's strategy to defeat the right now. Trump. They picked one person to ridicule, one person to attack, and boy, does he give them openings, right? Canada needs to be our 51st state. That was stupid. Stop saying it. It doesn't matter. Now it's the people's heads. We're gonna take over Greenland. We're gonna go to war with fucking Venezuela, right? And there's people that will defend it no matter what he says. But the people that are swayable, like that is. So what you do then is you paint everybody that's not you to be Trump or Trump supporter. If I say anything on social media to a leftard, well, you just love sucking orange dick, right? Something like that. Okay, I don't even like the guy. They don't know because the strategy is effective. If I'm the right now, that Zohan Dickfuck, whatever his name is in New York, I'm painting the whole Democrat Party with him if I'm using this strategy. I'm taking every old video I can find of him saying every lunatic Marxist thing possible. I don't care what he says now. It doesn't matter what he says now. It doesn't matter. You can cut out 10 seconds of Trump from 25 years ago, completely out of context, dump it in the machine. The machine will run with it. The right needs a machine like that. Or the alternative happens. If you don't like what I'm saying, you know what the alternative is. There's a break point. For those of you that don't get what I'm saying today, we're this fucking close. For those on the audio, my fingers are almost touching. We are this fucking close to where good men go, I've had a fucking enough. We're that close. I'd prefer playing dirty than civil fucking war. And you can't play fair with people who play dirty. You can't do it, not if you want to win. It makes a nice fucking Disney story about a little league team. It isn't true. It isn't true. The good guy doesn't always win. The good guy doesn't always run off in the sunset with the girl. In war, the side that attacks almost always wins. Almost always. Not always, but almost always. When the side that attacks doesn't win, it takes some huge conglomerated alliance to defeat them because the attack is the initiative. That's the real world. Well, you should only fight if you're – okay. Or you could read like The Art of War and learn that you should only fight a war when you know victory is assured instead of your nebulous bullshit you want to believe because they told you that when you were a little kid. They put G.I. Joe in your fucking hand and said he was a real American hero, even though it's a piece of plastic made in fucking China. You can grow up or you can keep believing in this freaking bullshit world that you've been had constructed in your mind that does not exist. You can fight fire with fire. You can fight fire with water. But you can't fight fire with a fucking hope. That's what some of you are doing right now. Next, pick a target. Freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. That's rule 13. It's basically rule 5 on steroids. You pick something or someone. And you make it everything until you wring every fucking ounce you can get out of it and then do it again with something else. Statues. Look at the movement the left created over fucking statues that nobody gave a fuck about for 100 years. And by the way, it's in my book, right? Laws of Life. Since that went away, nobody gives a fuck anymore. They tore down like a couple hundred statues. More than they tore down are still there. No one cares anymore. So it was never that important. The people behind that movement came right out of this fucking book. What can we get people pissed off over? I know there's a statue of Stonewall Jackson there.
Well, it's been there for, what? Let me do the math. 111 years. No one cares. We'll make them care, and they did. They so polarized it that people got in physical altercation. Some people died in the streets fighting over a fucking statue that neither side gave two square roots a fuck all about 2 weeks before it started the campaign. Now, here's the thing. There's a lot of shit on the left you could do this with. Way more than the right. We should be using these strategies, and we should be evolving these strategies to the modern and to at least some level of our ethics. The problem with when you start bringing ethics into this, again, you're playing a game with somebody who is willing to cheat all the time, and your coach is telling you, but if you cheat, then they'll cheat. They're going to fucking cheat. They're going to fucking cheat. And then sometimes there's what's called cheating in the bounds of the rules. I'll give you an example. I have a very good friend, like me, when he was a kid, he was a martial artist. His dojo was a little more Cobra Kai than Miyagi, okay? And when you're a kid and you, like, take these karate and shit and you go to these tournaments, it's not like, you know, Danielson, right? It's not two guys just beating the shit out of each other. You wear pads. You fight for points. They got that part right. And basically, when you land a blow, they call a point. Well, there's things you can do that break the rules that will cost you a point or half a point. And one of those things was striking the legs. Sweep the leg! No, you don't sweep the leg. That's actually dirty. And that'll get you, by the way, thrown the fuck out. Like, if you do it the way that he meant it there, right? Like jumping up in the air and kicking somebody in the knee or something, right? No, that's unacceptable. But since you're not supposed to hit the legs, your opponent doesn't expect you to hit their legs. So instead of like a martial arts check kick, right, what you do is you come in like what's called a shuffle, where that right foot comes up like you're going to do a front kick in the gut. And when the guard comes in, you drop the heel right into the freaking the quad, right into the muscle, right on the front of the thigh. Charlie horse, right? Remember when you were a kid in school? If you're old enough, we used to do that shit to people all the time. Charlie horse, bam, ah! And it, you're not really hurt, but you can't put weight on it for a couple minutes. The match doesn't last that long. So what his freaking dirty little bastard group did, until the other side would catch on and be looking out for it, they'd come in, first thing, wham, hammer that leg. You lose a half a point. Doesn't matter. I'm going to win the match. Did it break the rules? Actually, no. It was in the bounds of the rules. If you did it once, you didn't get thrown out of the match. Especially if it was like in a place that wasn't going to cause serious harm. Like you did it in the knee, you get thrown out. It was within the bounds of the rules. It had a negative consequence. But the negative consequence, if you were willing to do it, was worth the victory. Now, you know what I would have done? You know what I would have done? If I would have come against that when I was a kid that age? Oh, I see. And even if my sensei, Lee Barden, would have said, Jack, we don't do that. Okay, that's fine, sensei. Wham! Straight in. Faster, quicker, harder. Right? Once you show me the way you're going to play the game, guess what, bitch? And that's human nature. Have you ever wondered why they're not like, why don't they just say, fuck it with steroids in Major League Baseball and football? Lift it. If you want to use steroids, use fucking steroids. Fuck it. Because then everybody will do it. Because once the rule set changes and you're at that competitive level, you're going to come up to it. What's more competitive than control of society? This is reality whether you like it or not. I am sorry. I am not believing anything that they are saying about them murdering Charlie Kirk. Well, Cheryl, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you're not believing it. But what you're choosing to do is, I want to address this real quick on the conspiracy shit real quick before I move on and tell you why people are addicted to this. The NASA Jew Space Penguins did it or something. None of you want to admit fucking reality. And you don't even know what I'm talking about unless you've heard me say it already on social media. I'm not even talking about Charlie Kirk. None of you want to admit reality. The reality is that any retard anywhere on any given day can turn your head into fucking vapor. Killing someone's not hard. Getting away with it's hard, but doing it's easy. If you accept that a 20-something kid who got indoctrinated into this crap
pulled off what he pulled off, you're accepting that your head could blow up too. And you don't want to do it. And whether you know it or not, that's the fucking thing inside your chest eating away at you, going, there has to be another explanation. This is why when you drink all the time and you find out that somebody about your age died and they drank all the time, but they also smoked, you're like, ah, but he was a smoker. Because you can't see yourself in that position. That's the truth. That's why all of you are insisting it must be Israel. It must be Ukraine. It must be the space laser penguins, right? It has to be something. It can't just be that a sick, twisted little fuck did it. It is. Now, do I think other people might have been involved, FBI in the Discord server or whatever? Yeah, I'll also tell you this. There's a narrative going around a lot right now. The FBI didn't do anything. If it wasn't for the father turning him in. Well, first of all, that's usually how they catch people. They put out all the data that they have that they think is useful, and then somebody turns them in. That is law enforcement 101. The other thing I'm going to tell you is they knew who this fucker was before he turned himself in. It's been said as much without directly saying it. And most people who don't understand the legal system, right, they don't understand how this works. If I want to get this guy and I want to prosecute him, the strongest thing for my case is for him to turn himself in. That's the strongest thing for my case. He walks in and says, here I am. That really helps me. I know you don't think it does because, I don't know, the legal TV shows told you it didn't. Why would they want you to know the truth, right? And who controls the media? The left does, right? What I mean by that is he's all but guilty when his father says, here he is. Because his father didn't say, I believe my son's innocent and here he is. His father said, here he is. They squeezed them. They already were talking to the furry boyfriend. And I guarantee you the conversation wasn't like, yeah, just tell us what you know. It's like, listen, you could be in real trouble if you're not straight with us. We know you were talking to him on Discord as part of this group. Here's some of the information we already have about that. We know that he was in communication with you after the fact. We already know this. You better talk. Now, how did they get to him if they didn't know who the other guy was? Of course they knew who he was. They would have just kicked the door in. No. They squeezed, they surrounded, they made sure he wasn't going to get away, and they waited for him to be turned in. If that wouldn't have happened, they would have went and got him. They knew exactly where he was. That was a very simple case of squeeze and wait, because he wasn't going. He's not Jason Bourne, folks. Lone Horned Toad says, Ted Kaczynski's brother turned him in. Yep. And FBI gets a ton of credit for Ted Kaczynski's brother turning him in, because if they had, like, you should totally go watch a documentary on it. If they hadn't done the things they did, his brother would have never known and would have never turned him in. This is how you conduct after the fact law enforcement. You rally the public, because here's the other thing. I can't imagine turning my son in. I can. I can't imagine my son doing this. But if this situation was on me and somebody I loved and cared about did this and was in my home, I don't want to, but I'm going to. I'm going to turn them in. What's my alternative? Spend the rest of my life in federal prison for something I didn't do, for aiding and abetting? What do you think I'm going to do, get them a fake passport to say what nail? Clean out my bank account and give them the money and say good luck? Most people would do the same thing. Especially, maybe not like the kid knocked over a liquor store and came home, right? And mom might be like, get your ass out of here and here's some money, right? Like, sure. But a nationwide manhunt on a public assassination? No. They knew exactly what they were doing. The FBI and Seattle PD worked together and squeezed this to get the turn-in. Because that gave them right there a huge advantage. And it ensured no, gunpoint standoff or anything like that, right? Because you don't want that. It ensured no martyrdom. And again, I would tell you, it is likely the case that had that not worked for, another 4 or 5 hours, they would have kicked the door in with a SWAT team. But that's what actually happened. And I do not have sources that have confirmed that. I have sources that have been kind of like, well, you know, yeah, kind of, sure. Yeah. I don't really know, but yeah, like that. Because I do have sources, and this is what I usually get from a source. I can confirm that's true. I do not know if that's true or not. I cannot confirm that right now or deny it. Or I can confirm that's not true. Every once in a while, you kind of get wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Well, I don't really want to say it, but yeah. That's what I've gotten from this one. All right. Rules for Radicals is bad, though, isn't it? As I was doing some research for today's show, I found quite a few people saying, he dedicated his book to Lucifer. Yes, that Lucifer the devil. The right is retarded, too. I'm sorry. The right is retarded, too. There is a mention of a quote about Lucifer in the beginning of the book. The book is not dedicated to Lucifer. And if that bothers you, I understand. But let's not twist it. The quote is about the original renegade, the first renegade in recorded history. The Bible would be like the earliest recorded history. Does that mean it's an example? I don't know, but I also know this. Authors use shock to make a point. And I don't really care. Because I'm not saying to live by this. I'm not saying to turn it into your Bible. I'm saying it's the playbook they're using against you, and they've bashed your heads with for longer than it was written, and you don't understand it. Because, again, what this book really was is, let's look at every time in history this happened, and how did it happen? What was done? How did it become successful? It's a historical analysis more than anything else. But, of course, the rules must be adapted. Here's one example. There's one of the rules I didn't cover today, but I will in the future. You should always do things that your side enjoys as part of your movement. You want to give your side things to do they like to do, because then they'll do it. Well, apparently, the left, at least some segment of the left, likes burning down cities and Target stores. That's not what the right likes to do. No matter, even like there are vile people on both sides. There are good people on both sides, okay? Which is what Trump tried to say, and of course, they used rule number 5 and rule number 13 against him when he did, right? Right? But there are vile people on both sides, and there are good people on both sides, and there's a lot of middle on both sides. There really is. But even the vile right is not big on, like, robbing stores and burning down cities. So if you're going to adapt these rules, and one of the rules is give tasks to your side that they enjoy doing, you have to figure out, what does the right enjoy doing that advances things? Because, see, protesting doesn't advance things. Why do you think the left burns shit down? Because it gets attention. When you go just protest, no one gives a fuck. You're delusional if you think they give a fuck. I'm going to tell you that every single actual protest, whether it was striking workers, political activists, when they start their chanting, you know what it sounds like to me? Petulant children. It sounds like they just petulant, high-pitched, shrilling children. What do we want? Peace. When do we want it? Now, you sound like, even if I agree with what you're saying, you sound like a retard. That's why they riot. Rioting gets shit done. Maybe not in a good way, but it gets shit done. Especially when your secondary power apparatus that is the media protects you while you do it. It's fiery but mostly peaceful protests. Fiery but mostly peaceful protests. That's the way. So we need to adapt the rules. We also need to realize ignoring the enemy's playbook is at our own peril. Like I said with the football thing, like if you had the other team's playbook, would you use it? I would. There was actually an episode, I just had a brain cell pop from the 70s, right? There was an episode of Brady Bunch about this. Greg was a football player at school. They got the opponent's playbook, exactly what I said. And he shares it with the team, and they all study it. And he tells Mike, right, tells Dad, and Dad's like, oh, Greg, you know you can't. Because, see, the right was still in control of pop culture at the time. You know you can't do that. That's wrong. Oh, gee, Dad, I realize that you're right now. So Greg can't undo it. The team's already memorized the opponent's playbook. He literally goes to the other team and says, we want you to know that we got a copy of your playbook. And so if you want it to be a fair game, you probably need to change your calls. Of course, the other team doesn't believe it, so they don't do it, and they get killed. That's not the way it would have happened. Greg would have never told Mike, and they would have killed the other team because they would have known every play that was being called. Because that's the real fucking world. You don't ignore your enemy's playbook. Whether you like this book or not, you should know it because it's your enemy's playbook. But I'm going to go further than that. All the talk about, I can't believe that you read Karl Marx. You better read Karl Marx. It's being used against you. You better know it's being used against you. I guarantee you Charlie Kirk read Karl Marx's manifesto. I guarantee you he did. Probably more than once. Because he was concerned with knowing the actions of the other side. You have to know the actions of the other side. You can't think, you're not a 12-year-old. Right? You're a grown-ass man or woman, hopefully, if you listen to my show. You should be able to read opposing ideology and understand it without being sucked into it. What are you afraid? Well, if you start doing the white magic, you're going to end up in the black magic and damn the hell. Please grow up. You better learn what your enemy's doing. Then I'm going to ask you this. What's your alternative solution? If not turning at least some part of their own system against them, which includes not just these rules for radicals, we have to take back academia. We need to continue Charlie's work. That's Charlie's actual work. It's not debating people. It's taking back academia. You have to take academia before you can take the media, because the pipeline out of academia into the media is full of liberals out of academia. You can't change the media. You can't take that. That's why the left went there first. Started in the 20s and it ramped up in the 50s. And by the 70s, they had completely captured academia, and that's why they rolled over to taking over the media. You can watch the timeline play out. Go back and look at how it changed and when it changed. 1970s, we had TV shows. I used to watch sitcoms like, remember Good Times? J.J. Walker, right? Dynamite. Well, they killed off the patriarch of the show early, James. He got shot and killed, right? But what did James say to Florence and Thelma and JJ and little Michael when the family came on hard times and they talked about welfare? James said, "This family has never taken charity and we won't start now. We will get by." I guarantee you can go find old episodes of that show and many like it. That was pop culture in the 1970s. By the 1980s, it disappeared. And by the 1990s, there were shows about how to get on welfare. I'm not making this shit up. I'm not making this timeline up. You can go verify it for yourself. So we have to take back academics first. That's why they killed Charlie. You want to continue Charlie's work. It's not about prove me wrong. That was just his method. That's one method. It's an effective method. Again, how effective? Turning Point USA had 9,000 chapters, about 1,100 in high school, the balance in colleges, on Wednesday last week. By Friday afternoon, they had received 18,000 requests for new chapters. Double what they built in over 10 years in 2 days. That's in motion. That's already going to happen. But what else can be done? Academia must be ripped apart. It has to be like, this is like basic training. When you go into basic training, the first thing to do is destroy your soul. They rip you apart. They beat you down. Then they build you up. Academia has to be stripped bare. The good news is the momentum's in our favor. The enrollment cliff is real. Colleges are closing. The biggest problem with fighting the colleges right now is your leader, the orange man. As long as the orange man lets us continuously import millions of students on student visas for the colleges can't suffer the ramifications that they brought on themselves from America. Every American citizen that doesn't go or isn't foreign is replaced with an Indian or somebody from Argentina or whatever. The colleges are on welfare from the state provided by the orange man in the form of student visas. So unfortunately, we have to fight that too. But it's still ripping them asunder. They have to go. They have to be dragged down to the bottom, and we have to reprime that pump. We have to like rip the pipe out of the ground, put in new pipe, new pump, new plumbing, new electronics, new everything. That's what has to happen in academia. And that's what Charlie was doing. It's dangerous work, by the way. They may kill you for it. So many people are willing to go out and risk civil war. Are you willing to risk speaking up publicly like Charlie did? That's what I want to know. Oh, by the way, if you think that it's limited to people at Charlie's level, threats of physical violence or even death, you're wrong. There's probably not a podcaster out there, including myself, that hasn't received death threats. Some of them that seem quite credible, by the way. And you know what? Fuck you, I won't shut up. All right? Fuck all of you, I won't shut up. Don't miss, because I won't. That's my response to people like that. Don't miss, because I don't. I shot my first deer when I was 14 years old. My uncle said to my dad, that was the kid and the kid don't miss. I'm better than I was at 14, baby. Don't miss. Yeah, what is your alternative solution? That brings me to another rule, Rule 12 of Rules for Radicals. The price of a successful attack is a constructive alternative. You have no fucking right to criticize anything if you can't say, and here's a solution to go along with it. And I won't apologize for saying that, because you tell me, you long-term listeners, you guys that have been with me since 08, has not always been what we've done here. We've never pointed to a problem and just said, that's just a problem, it needs to go away. No, that's never happened here. Even when the show's 80% the beginning of the problem, we always end with solutions. So if you don't like my methods today, then I need to hear from you what you're going to do. And it better not be take the high road and have a constructive converse, because that shit didn't work. And it didn't just not work this last week. Let's be honest, it hasn't worked for 70 years. Einstein didn't say it, but it's true that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Another misattribution, but it's true. It's absolutely true. Keep doing what you're doing, you'll get exactly what you've always gotten, and it ain't been good. You went from 20 years ago to 90% of the things that bother you today didn't even exist to the dominant thing in the culture today. No. No. If you want to tell me I'm wrong, I'm open. I'm not having a conversation with them anymore. I'm done. As soon as somebody starts explaining to me why it's okay for a dude with a 9-inch schlong to go into the woman's bathroom or anything like that, for some freaking retard to talk to a kindergartner about their sex life, no matter what their sexual preference is, any of that shit at all, I'm done. Those days are over. T-Dow. Okay? I'm done. But I'll have a conversation with y'all. You want to tell me I'm wrong? Great. Where's your fucking solution? And it better be something new. It better be something different, because more of the same is more of the same. And if you do something that doesn't work and you do more of it, it doesn't work more. It's like having a business and going, well, see, your problem is for every one of your little titanium widgets you sell, you lose a dollar. And you say, I know what we'll do. We'll market harder and sell more. Just go out of business faster. I hate to say this, but see, Jake's hitting on it. It says backhoe time. I'm trying to avoid backhoe time. I'm telling you, we may not. Actually, at this point, I don't even think we're going to avoid backhoe time, excavator time, trencher time, pig time. Some of you are like, pigs? If you know, you know. Okay? I don't think we're going to avoid it. I just won't want there to be enough of it to catalyst into a full-on civil war, because that's where this is headed otherwise. So I need to know what your solution is if you don't like mine. The bigger issues for using this actually are, okay? Like, this is why I think we do need a new version of this plan, not necessarily this book. It's written for the poor. This book is written for the have-nots and, like, true poverty-level have-nots. Alinsky wrote this book looking at the slum ghettos. And when he looked for the corollaries in history as to where those people took power, That's what he looked to throughout history. The absolute, desolate poor. We need modifications because the right in general is not poor. Now, there's a lot of poor-ass people on the right. Hillbillies, rednecks, etc. I get it. But in general, the right is actually pretty affluent. They're different affluent than the left. But the country is affluent. Again, there's not just not that many have-nots in this country anymore. A lot of people that think they are. You have students who talk about the struggle, man. The struggle and how poor. And they're at fucking Cornell. And mommy's paying for their freaking tuition. Yeah, that's not a have-not. And the right's not a bunch of have-nots either. So what the right lacks is power in two primary locations, media and academia. So there needs to be an acknowledgement of that, that you can't just take the direct blueprint as it is. The right likes to think of the world as it should be versus as it is. Now, I can tell you, you have to let go of that, but this book is about seeing the world as it is. And as it is, the right sees it the way it should be, in general. The left does, too, in a very twisted way, the way they think it should be, which is lunacy. And I'm sorry, it is. And please understand right now, when I say the left, I'm not talking about a 90s centrist Democrat like Donald Trump or Bill Clinton. I'm not today's left. Let's just be clear on that, right? There's also no fast track here. There is no fast track on this. Now, Alinsky's book was written to speed up the process. But this country is incredibly diverse and incredibly unique. I don't like the term American exceptionalism because it's of how it's used. Okay? I really don't. But America is exceptional in many ways. Some exceptionally good and some exceptionally not so good. But because of how different this place is than anywhere else on Earth, it was designed to be difficult to enact change. They called it checks and balances in your civics class. And some vestiges of that are left. And because it is difficult to enact change, that's why you can't just do it with politics. The reason most nations are so easily taken over is because enough money to the right people, and you get the people elected that are on your team, and you have control of everything. This country is much more difficult to control. It's huge. It's incredibly diverse demographically. States are like countries unto themselves in many ways, not just from a power perspective. But you can't tell me there's not a mass cultural difference between two pretty similar states, Texas and Tennessee, because I've seen it. I don't have anything against people from Tennessee. But when I'm in Tennessee, I don't feel like I'm home. Now, I know if I went and lived in Tennessee for a year, I would totally feel like I'm home. But I go to a lot of places. I was just in Alaska. It was really awesome. Great people. I didn't feel like I was home. It was much prettier. Still didn't feel like I was home because there's that much of a difference. So it takes time to create change in this country. And that's why the left played the long game and they're good at it and the right isn't. It took 70 years to get where we are. Now, there's a rule in alternative health. And that is like, alternative health is not replacement theory. Like, if I had a headache, instead of taking aspirin, I use white willow bark, which is what they make the original aspirin out of. That's replacement theory. It's herbalism. Alternative health is like, why do you have a headache? You need to fix the underlying issue. And it may have to do with your diet, your lifestyle, etc. And a general rule of thumb in alternative health is it takes 1 year to correct every 5 years of negative behavior. So if you live a shitty life for a decade, 10 years, and you really do a wreck to your health, assuming that it's recoverable, you haven't gone over the last edge, and you take the alternative approach to restoring your health, it'll take 2 years. I don't think the ratio is that good in this. I always talk about seven generational thinking. You better start thinking at least three to do this. How long do you think it'll take to take over academia? And you really have to do that and then wait another 10 years before you begin to make a meaningful impact on the media. The right is not patient. The left is incredibly patient. Now, the lunatic left in the streets are not patient. But the people in power over the left, they're really good at something that the right isn't.
understanding the role each piece on the chessboard plays. See, when they look at the blue-haired lunatic screaming, they're like, oh, we don't want her at her country club. Because they're at the same country club as the guy from that's running the right is. Because in the end, it's a uniparty. Right? We don't want her there. I don't want her dating my son, for fuck's sake. Or my daughter, or whatever, right? Like, I don't want that. I don't want to hang out with this person, but I know what to do with them. And you think that's horrible, and it is, but, okay. The kid you're fighting in your karate tournament when you're 13 years old is going to frog you in the freaking, you know, he's going to Charlie horse your leg and take a half-point penalty, and you're not going to be able to stand for the next 2.5 minutes, and you're going to lose. Or you can frog him first. We need to start understanding what each group, what their role is. You know a great book to read about this? A great book to read about this. And it's not a blueprint, but it'll get your head in understanding these silos and how they're all actually, they look different, but they're all working to the same end. The Illuminatus Trilogy by Robert Anton Wilson and Robert Anton Wilson is one of the authors. I can't think of the other author right now. The Illuminatus Trilogy. It's 3 books in 1. Every conspiracy theory that ever existed when the book was written, plus more are in it. And there's all these factions, and some are diametrically opposed, but yet they're all working for the same people at the top. That's advanced rules for radicals right there. And again, the left is just better at this. The left is better at this. The right's not good at organizing. The right's good at organizing a church picnic. The right's good at organizing a group of people from church to go help people during a hurricane. The right is good at organizing to a specific short-term mission. That's what the right's good at. Like, there is a problem. We don't like the problem. There's people hurting. We want to help those people. Let's get together and go do it. The right's very good at that. But don't think about it like an episodic TV show. The right is good at missions like a TV show, like a crime show, where every episode is a new bad guy, and at the end of the show, the bad guy's in jail or dead. The right is good at mission like that. The left is more like the TV show that goes 7 seasons, and it doesn't end until the last episode. And there's no real cut and dry endings in the middle. It's one story. It's one bad guy, or it's one conflict all the way through it. That's how the left works. That's this process. That's rules for radicals. It is a slow plotting strategy whereby the enemy is worn down in a war of attrition. I don't know exactly how we adapt that for conservatives, the right, the non-lunatics. But I think it needs to be done. Ashley says the right aren't scheming. They're not. And what do we think? When we hear the word scheming, that's nasty. That's bad. You better start scheming because they're scheming against you. You better start fighting fire with fire. Because if we go long enough without fighting fire with fire, we're going to end up fighting fire with bullets. That's my real fear here. And I still think it's my ideas today, I think, are 30% likely. And the alternative that I don't want, I think, is 70% likely. I've moved 5 points in the positive direction over the weekend. But my resolve is more firm. And I have no interest in dialogue with these people. None. And I don't think we can have dialogue with these people until they are in a position of weakness. Until they're in a true position of weakness, you cannot have dialogue with them. This is a war now. You know, when you go to the table for negotiations in a war, when you know at this point I'm about to be completely defeated and lose everything and I want to salvage what I can get, or when you know your opponent is there. If you go to the negotiating table, even while you have an advantage, but your opponent is still not in a position of weakness, the negotiations can only hurt you. That's where we are. I know you don't like it, but it's true. Learning curve and organizing is just not a strength of the right. So how do we change that? Can we make it a strength?
I don't know. And I feel weird saying this because I don't consider myself the right. But in a war, you have to pick a fucking side or you get mashed in the middle. And I'm telling you, if you want to define this as left versus right, it's not how I define it. But if you're going to define it that way, I know which side I'm picking. Guess which side it is. It's not even hard to think about. My final thoughts on this. Yes, it must be adapted, but the alternative is way worse than what you think about my angle, no matter how bad you think it is. If you think Saul Alinsky really is a Marxist that dedicated his book to Lucifer, which is dumb, go read it then and see if they can prove it. You know, but here's the reality too. Rule 9, the threat is usually more terrifying than the thing itself. I mentioned Stephen King. When he was actually a decent horror writer, that was actually his trick. Before he went woke and nuts and started writing garbage, somebody asked him one time, how do you make people so afraid with a book? And he said, when you were a little kid, you were afraid of the monster under your bed. There was no monster. But in your mind, you created one. And no matter what would have been under that bed, what you created was worse than what could ever be under that bed. And that's why you were so afraid, and that's what I write about. I don't know, maybe Stephen King read Rules for Radicals before he became a writer. I don't know. But the threat is usually more terrifying than the thing itself. One thing that you need to understand, Lynn Nilsson saying the radical left doesn't follow the rules. I don't know how long you've been in the chat today, bud, but actually they do follow rules. They just don't follow your rules. This is something people need to understand. Everybody follows rules. But almost everybody writes their own rules. They might base their rules. If you're Christian, you probably base a lot of your rules on the Bible, what would Jesus do, etc., right? If you're secular, but you're a moralist, you probably still base a lot of your rules on the same thing a Christian does, those Western values. And if you're not, then you have something else you base your rules on, like the ends justify the means, a big part of the book that we won't be talking about today. But I do think there is a place for, you know, maybe, just maybe, the left needs a little bit of fear in them, of the threat that isn't even there. Because they're not afraid of anything right now. The fact that they're actually shocked when they get fired. And by the way, I'm going to tell you, a lot of the videos you're seeing, you're going to be fired. Ah! Like that. That's not real. It's not real. It's not real. It's attention whores. Most of the ones you're seeing with total meltdowns are attention whores. But a lot of fucking people are getting fired. And the ones that are getting fired, that really are making reaction videos, that are not like freaking out, but they're like, I just said what I thought. And I thought you guys were like those people. They're actually shocked. Oh, gee, you thought you could be a nurse at a public hospital and say, F Charlie Kirk, I don't care if he would have came to my ER, I wouldn't even have treated him and keep your job? And the answer is yes, they thought they could do that. So they're not afraid of anything. Maybe. It's time for them to be afraid of something. And they don't actually have to be afraid of a thing. If you can help them create the monster under the bed for themselves, maybe they'll start checking themselves a little bit. Oh, that's dirty and nasty. I encourage you, if you're thinking that right now, to go back to minute zero and listen to this whole episode because you came in late. No matter what the new world we live in, it is time for TDAF. Those days are over. Whatever rules you've been controlling yourself with up till now, you don't have to go to the dark side. You don't have to go fucking Anakin, Lord Vader, and start lightsabering people. But if you've labored under, well, you know, Republicans shouldn't gerrymander because they already did. Anything that the left can do that advances their cause that they think they can pull off, they will do. So the idea that we shouldn't, because then they will, we should do what works. And if within the bounds of our morality, sure. But if the judgment, well, it's not that I don't think we should do it. It's that it opens the door. Shut up. Shut up. Shut the F up. You sound so stupid when you say so. And I mean politically, socially, in every aspect. But if we do that, then that open, there is no closed door. The only door that's closed is on our side, and we closed it and we locked it from ourselves. The other side, there's the locks on the other side, right? We locked ourselves out of the house. We're like, if we unlock the door, they'll get out, right? It's like locking yourself in your car. You can't do it. The lock's on the inside. You don't need a key to get out. We got to stop this nonsense. Teed out. Those days are over. We need to have a more unifying conversation. No, 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 no. We had that. Charlie Kirk was the olive branch. Charlie Kirk was the guy that went to these schools and said, if you disagree with me, get in the front of the line. Charlie Kirk was the guy that let everybody be heard. Charlie Kirk was the guy at times when his own security people tried to drag people away, said, no, 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 don't you do that. Leave them alone. Let them speak. Let them be heard. Charlie Kirk was the olive branch. The left covered the olive branch in kerosene and set it on fire. And now they want to have a conversation. Go have a conversation with yourselves. Go have a conversation with yourselves. When you're contrite, when you can admit that you were wrong, things like that, then we can talk about forgiveness. All this crap, but we are commanded to forgive. We are commanded to forgive the contrite, not the willfully malicious. You don't agree with me? You don't have to. That's my take. I'm not forgiving you while you're still in the act of aggressing against me. If you commit a transgression against me, you can say to me, Jack, I was wrong. I am sorry. And I accept that I was wrong and I should have never done that to you. I can extend you forgiveness. While you're MFing me and hitting me and throwing shit at me and lying about me and being malicious about me and telling me to shut up, I'm not forgiving you. I'm not forgiving you. And I don't gain anything from doing so. I gain nothing from doing so. And I feel no obligation to do so. If you do, that's your cross to bear, not mine. I'm done. T. Dow. Those days are over. I am not interested in a dialogue with people who call people like me Nazis. I am not interested in a dialogue that say that people like me hate gays when I was a guy who said I would perform marriages for gays before it was legal. I am not okay with your bullshit. I'm not okay being called a racist when some of the best friends I've ever had in my life, and I mean, I had a black guy, some of the best friends I've ever had in my life are different races. I'm not okay with it. I'm not having a conversation with anybody that makes claims like that about me or anybody like me because you're not fucking worthy of it. Charlie Kirk was a better man than me. He reached out. You burned the olive branch. So fuck you. You have a lot to make up for if you're on that other side of things before any decent person should have anything to do with you, much less a true conversation. But without conversations, what do we get? With conversations, what have we gotten? Look at your society. What have we gotten? Power is not only what you have, but what the enemy thinks you have. Make the enemy live up to its own book of rules. Make the enemy... Ridicule is a man's most potent weapon. There is no defense. It's almost impossible to counteract ridicule. Also, it infuriates your opposition, who then react to your advantage. Pick a target, freeze it, personalize it, polarize it. The threat is usually more terrifying than the thing itself. The price of a successful attack is a constructive alternative. That is reality, whether you like it or not. With that, wrapping things up, I do have an item of the day. I kind of feel weird pitching an item of the day now after an episode like that, but I do have to pay the bills, and you guys do need good things in your life. My item of the day today is a Impact socket set, which is actually, it's not just for Impact tools. It's just Impact capable. You can use it like a regular socket ratchet set. 6-point design, really great tool, made by a company called Easley. And you can check it out. You can go to tspaz.com whenever you're shopping online and help us out. If you want to figure out, how do I win in this world today? How do I become successful? Especially if you're a young person. I mean, one of the reasons that the left has been so effective at corrupting the minds of our youth is because our youth can't see a future where they prosper. You have 25-year-olds today thinking, I'll never own a house. When I was 25, I bought my first house. That's why they're able to take your children from you, because your children can't see a future. That's why I wrote Laws of Life. It's for everybody, but man, is it for the 15 to 30-year-old. If you have somebody like that in your life and you want them to understand they do have a future, put this book in front of them. You know, we talk about rules for radicals today. Laws of Life is rules for success. So pick up a copy, Laws of Life, Ditch the System, Design Your Life, by me, Jack Spirico, available on Amazon. With that, I do have some questions and some super chats that came in. I'm sure I missed a lot of them, but I'll do what I can. And if you have any more, I'll check when I'm done, and then we're going to wrap up. Comment, I'm your Huckleberry, says, they are saying, but there were people on the left targeted too. Why no outrage about that? Because there weren't. Because there weren't. Not like the right. That's why. And the truth is, there have been some left-wing public officials and things like that targeted or hurt, and the right always speaks out against it. Why isn't there outrage? Because a low-level bureaucrat getting shot by somebody that may or may not have been politically motivated is way different than blowing the head off or blowing the throat out of a guy in public that had, you know, tens of millions of people that loved him. That's why. Because it's in the scale of the event. And it's also because when something happens to somebody on the left, the media is like, oh my God. And when it happens to somebody on the right, the media is like, he did it to himself, or there's nothing to see here. That's why. That's why. All right. Lazarus Rex says, give me a $5 super chat. Thanks for that, bro. Says, dumb versus stupid equals state versus straight. I like it. I like it. And he also threw me another $10, man. Thanks for being so generous today. He says, but they will do it if we do it to them. A, they already are. B, look up game theory. Tit for tat leads to better outcomes overall, though mutually enforced reciprocity. See, here's the thing. You're laboring under this, but if we do it, then they'll do it to us. And they're thinking we can do whatever the fuck they want to them, and they don't have enough spine to do it to us. Yeah. Yeah. That was David's karate team, man. Frog that leg, because those little pussies won't do it back. I guess they never ran into me, because I would have frogged the shit out of your leg. I would have bloodied your face and got thrown out of the match if you did that dirty shit to me, just to be honest. Not me today. And if I was coaching kids today, that's not what I would have done. But 13-year-old Jack, yeah, I would have bloodied your face for it. Like, you would have got, boom, an elbow, right? Like, I do that nasty shit. We just didn't do it. Daniel says, I've worked at a local church for the last 12 years. The crowd that showed up and the message that was given on Sunday was intense. If that happened at some churches across the country, oh boy. Oh, it did. Oh, it did. I saw one of the leftist influencers say, Charlie Kirk is not martyr worthy. There won't be any big reaction to this. And the person took that and they put it into a video. And it was visuals, not just all across America. It was all across the world. Charlie Kirk is somebody that I always kind of liked when I would see him, like, owning libs and shit. But I really didn't know that much about him. Turning Point USA wasn't really on my radar. I'm not the political guy in general. I'm a lifestyle design guy, which means I don't care who's in fucking charge. I'm building my life my way. That's why I wrote a book about it. But since this has happened, I've heard more from Charlie Kirk since he died than I did in the 10 years before it happened. And I'm incredibly impressed. And I can see why he resonated, especially with young men. Do you know who was a huge follower of Charlie Kirk? And I didn't even know it till this happened. My grandson. First thing he said to my wife when she picked him up from school, "Grandma, did you hear what happened?" And he said, "I listened to him a lot. And what my wife said to him was simply, keep listening. His words aren't gone." So yeah, the movement is bigger than you can imagine. And for every, you know, group that's like, oh, we need to do the right thing or whatever. Again, there's some people. And this is this one. I guess Idaho Puma, you must not have been here. He says, so what do you expect to happen? What I expect to happen is some people on the right to start making some people on the left. I don't like the word expect in this because I'm about to complete. What I'm predicting will happen that I do not wish to happen. There are going to be some people on the right that are very calculated and methodical that might start making some people on the left disappear. And then where it goes from there, I don't know. But I expect that eventually some people will do the math and figure out what's going on. Because it's just how people on the right work. If you go into the people that have a predisposition and talent for violence. Again, this is what I said at the beginning. I guess you weren't here. But like, I'm not going to hurt anybody. Because I don't want anybody like having my door kicked in by the cops or some shit. But let's say that there was like a legitimate, like some person, and I couldn't get law enforcement to do anything about it. And I thought they were going to kill one of my grandchildren. Bro, you're going to a hole in the ground. But I am not going to talk about it on Discord. I'm not going to shoot you from a bell tower where I can't get away. You're just going to disappear. And at the time he disappeared, there's going to be people that are like, oh, Jack, he was with me. It will be an episode of Unsolved Mysteries 5 years later, if I do it. There's people way better than me at that. Way more demented. Way more willing to take a life than I am. Like, if I ever have to take a life, it's going to be hard for me to live with, even if I say it won't. I don't want to ever take somebody's life. And the older I get, the more that is true. The more that is true. I don't ever want, you know, if I'm in a situation where somebody's trying to kill somebody and it's an innocent person being attacked and I'm armed, which is usually the case, that head's going to go, pfft. Okay, it's going to happen. I don't want it to happen. Dude, there are people that want it to happen. There are people that don't train all the time in case it happens. They want to be ready when it happens. They're smart. They're trained and they know what they're doing. And anybody that tells you that's not a thing is in denial of reality. I don't see any more questions here. We do have a statement here. Jack's live stream last week told me it was an ongoing situation, crazy times. It is an ongoing situation. It is. I think that's it, though. I think we're ready to wrap up. But Muntu says the UK march was also pretty cool to see. I don't think it was directly related to Charlie Kirk, but I think it might have been catalyzed by it. If you didn't see it, over 1 million people. I think it was over 2 million people on the streets in the UK. And what they're pissed about is losing their country. We are on the edge of either a correction to all that has been going wrong or civil war as a form of correction. We're at a point, and this is what I'll wrap up with. This is why it's a dangerous time in society. We're at a point where good men are like, quoting the Bible again, I guess, to hither thou shalt come and no further. There's been so many peaceful men, but not nonviolent men, who've been like, and most of those men wanted some very simple things. Leave me alone. Leave my family alone. Leave my children alone. Go do whatever the fuck you want. but leave me alone. That's all they really wanted. Beware when men who only sought to be left alone realize they will never be left alone. There is a point where that, goes click. And I've literally seen it on people's faces. And it's, the emotion go, people in this mindset, they don't go into a rage, a berserker rage. They don't scream on TikTok. They don't carry signs. They just go click. And then the mind kicks in. And the rational mind set to evil is inherently dangerous. And there is a place where the only way to stop evil is for good men to do terrible things to bad men. I'd like to course correct before that point, and we are very close to that point. With that, I'll catch you guys tomorrow with another episode. Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.